Welcome to Digitalization Tech Talks, the podcast where for the past 4 years we've focused on topics related to digital technologies in the process industries. Our intent has been and continues to be to present you with information that will help to keep you up to speed with the latest technologies that are soon coming, or in some cases have already reached the market. After 4 years, we decided it was time to review some of the highlights of the first 42 episodes and offer our perspective into what is happening in the world of digitalization in the process industries. We've had the pleasure to interview outstanding guests from all angles and a variety of positions in the industry, ranging from end users to suppliers to educators and even industry association representatives. And in each case, we've left knowing much more about a topic than we did coming in. Today, for the first time in the history of the show, we do not have a guest. We'll be back to our regularly scheduled program next month. Instead, we're going to discuss what we've learned and where we're headed from here in episodes 44 and beyond. With that, I'd like to introduce a gentleman I've had the pleasure to work with for close to a decade and specifically on this series for the past several years. Hello, Jonas. How are you feeling about us breaking from our usual format to celebrate this special occasion?
Hey, Don. It's definitely been an episode that's a lot different than the 42 that precede this one. We decided to go down memory lane on this four-year anniversary of the first episode being released in July of 2020 to sort of reflect and contemplate and highlight some of the many, many things that we have learned. I personally feel like I have learned a lot from all of our guests because we have covered so many different topics. And for me, I think there are two topics in particular that stand out because we've covered them in several episodes. And because of that, I would almost call them like evergreen in my mind because there is so much new content to cover every time we bring them up. And first off, that's artificial intelligence. I think it's a good place or it's a good topic to highlight because it's changed so drastically in the 4 years we've been around to talk about it on the podcast. AI has gone from being this almost elusive idea of being able to crunch these large amounts of data and create valuable insights to something that's now here, being implemented, being fully utilized, and more importantly, adding significant value across the process industries. I can surely promise you that AI will also be part of any future episodes. And then the second topic I want to highlight is cybersecurity, which really has evolved from not only being critical to keeping operations running at all times, and safely and securely, of course, but also to include secure by implementation in addition to secure by design. Because the idea of products and solutions being cybersecure in and of itself is no longer enough. When implementing cybersecurity strategies, you must look at the big picture, making sure that the strategy covers every aspect of the process planned operations and even beyond. And although that might not be entirely new, there are small nuances and aspects to it that definitely are.
Well, thanks, Jonas. We've discussed a number of different topics, and those are two of the key ones that stand out. And particularly today, I think we're all at least directly or indirectly faced with cybersecurity challenges and also with leveraging AI. Our regular listeners are probably familiar with by now with the format that we often follow. So we generally pick a specific topic and cover it. We talk about one or more use cases that are associated with it. And then we talk about challenges associated with the use case, along with potential solutions to address that use case, and they leverage technology advances. We follow that with keys to success and how to get started, and then we usually end with key takeaways. So Jonas, in that vein, what are one or two use cases that have stuck out to you?
Well, since I was just talking about cybersecurity, let me continue down that path, because one aspect of cyber that has been exacerbated in recent years is remote connectivity. There are so many great benefits of being able to connect to a piece of equipment, a plant, or whatever it may be, remotely, but it also has some inherent risks associated with it. So recently, we had Marco Ayala from InfraGuard on the podcast to talk about cybersecurity. And he highlighted this particular use case or scenario, as he calls it. So let's listen to what he had to say.
Many asset owner operators in the process industry space have been moving relatively quickly to roll out more technology that allows them access to their systems and data that's faster, quicker, and more importantly, cheaper. This landscape is an attractive target for all those exact same things. However, what has changed even more so is the access to these systems remotely from employees, vendors, integrators that were traditionally not allowed and highly discouraged for the better part of history until 2020, in which a global pandemic really triggered the management of change scenarios globally to allow remote access to support the plant operations in order to protect workers and families from this virus. And the reality is that these temporary MOCs, especially if you've been in the field for a long time, what's temporary becomes permanent. And so, which in its own right has become part of the equation of this ever-evolving landscape for a threat scenario.
So the rub here is that remote connectivity does add risk to the equation, and this must be managed very tightly to prevent from opening up to undesired access, which could, of course, lead to catastrophic and or very costly consequences. Now, the other use case is related to AI. One use case that I found really, really interesting was presented by Mike Dessauer. In a recent episode, he shared an example of how generative AI is able to provide insights to users based on information that's sort of hidden, you could say, in thousands and thousands of documents that people are not able to look through, hence hidden. The outcome was a chat box that was developed specifically to help employees find pertinent or important information quickly and easily in a solution that goes way beyond a standard search engine. Now, not everything is a dance on roses when implementing AI, which our guests have also highlighted again and again over the years. So let's hear what Mike had to say about that.
Yeah, there's several technical challenges that need to be overcome and really require a diverse skill set. Firstly, we are very fortunate to have a strong developer who can lead this project, who has skills in both the software development space and also in data science. And since the underlying project that make up generative AI chat applications are evolving so rapidly, your development team needs to stay up to date to leverage the newest capabilities. And another technical challenge is really building out the data foundation to make these documents that I'm referring to AI ready. In our industry, we rely a lot on legacy document management systems for storing the key information that our knowledge holders need to get to, and we want to include this in this application. So ensuring you can access and utilize these document collections is critical for the user experience and be able to do this securely. And so we always leverage the existing security groups within our IT organization that they sponsor so that we're not creating any new types of security threats.
As you heard, there were several challenges associated with the generative AI implementation, but Mike and the team were able to overcome them by being very deliberate about how to solve them with the help of people and technology, which are two key pillars that we talk about in this podcast.
We're taking a brief break from this episode to let you know that you can learn from Axel Nobel and BASF on how to use digital technologies to improve operations. Simply go click on the link in the show notes.
That we talk about in this podcast. Now, what about you, Don? Are there any particular solutions that stand out from your perspective?
Sure, Jonas. Those were some great examples that you cited, and we've talked about an abundance of solutions. And one in particular that stands out to me is modular automation and the use of MTP or module type packages. And what that is an approach to engineering that facilitates interoperability between DCSs or distributed control systems and PLCs that are often provided on skids or package units. And what MTP does is it allows you to increase efficiency and flexibility and help to improve standardization as well. We had a great conversation about this with Merck's Sebastian Hartner, a principal process development project lead, about how Merck is benefiting from MTP. Here's what Sebastian had to say about it.
The important thing is really the digitalization between this or the connectivity at the end. So if you have all these modules available, and on the technical point of view, we already showcased this in the early of 2000. So we started with a modular process intensified plant in 2004 in our production environment. The issue was you can build this on a hardware perspective, but not on an automation perspective. So we were not able to easily reconnect these modules on an automation level. And this is now where this POL and MTP concept is really pushing us to the next level of production environment. So what we can now do is easily connect modules, have them also fully automated, so we can run recipes on these systems. And on the other hand, with this standardized MTP concept, which is an international standard, you also have directly the FAIR data concept. So you have findable data, accessible data. This data is interoperable and it's repeatable. And this is really one of this also mega trends what the World Economic Forum in 2019 already addressed for the process industries.
I always find it particularly beneficial when we hear from the end users that are not only taking on the challenges of utilizing new technology and new ways of doing things, but flourishing as a result. Do you have one that you'd like to highlight?
Yes, absolutely. One solution that I found really intriguing is related to the digital twin and specifically to an operator training system, or OTS, as they are commonly referred to. An OTS is essentially able to simulate the operation of a distributed control system used to run and operate process plants. Now, there is several benefits of having such a system, but instead of giving them all away, I would propose that you listen to the episode with Tony Lee from Evonik. He has experience making use of an OTS for a greenfield project on the Gulf Coast. And in the following clip, he provides some advice about what to think about when considering the use of an operator training system.
First, you need to work with a vendor like Siemens to become more educated on exactly the process and how it will work in the OTS, and sit down with the team to understand the financial investment and the schedule of activities. That's a key piece of it, because it was quite a surprise when I spoke to the head project responsible and we started talking about when these things need to be developed and started looking at the schedule for the OTS, and it was quite an eye-opener for the team members to understand that, hey, we got a lot of work to do now that we didn't really project having to do now, but maybe 6 months or a year from now. I think it's looking at that is probably the key. You really need to understand the time and energy investment by the staff to make it happen.
I thought this was really good and useful advice from Tony Lee relative to an OTS implementation. Tony's comments, I think, also serve as some key points to success that include working with reputable vendors, making sure that people are equipped to take full advantage of a technology implementation, giving them the tools to make them be successful in doing that. And since I somehow at least mentioned the keys to success, I want to touch on the people and the development of the workforce a little bit, which is so crucial to the future success of any company in the process industries, especially with all these changes going on right now. In my mind, and I have also reiterated this time and time again throughout the years on this podcast, people are the most important assets in any company. I don't really care how beneficial or cool a technology is. If the people that are going to use it are not part of the identification of any potential use cases or part of the subsequent implementation, there's a very, very high risk that the technology will not be successful and not provide the benefits that were promised in the beginning. This also means that developing the skills of the workforce of the future is really important, especially in the current environment with this constant and consistent change. And I just want to add here that I did attend a conference this week in California, and in that there was an entire multi-day track dedicated to the workforce development topic. Actually, there were two. That just underlines the importance of the topic. But what about you, Donna? Are there some keys to success that have stuck with you over the years?
Yeah, I definitely agree with you about that particular point. And to continue that point on workforce development, I'd say a key to success that we've heard about is engaging the workers in the complete learning process, from the development of the educational tools themselves to the completion of the training. We had a guest named Steve Moskowitz. He's a principal with Industry Forward, and they help companies to figure out their digitalization journeys, and as part of that is workforce development. This is a snippet of what Steve had to say on this topic.
We also need to get our learning and development teams focused more on this process of continuous learning and providing opportunities to engage our workers in the learning process. They know what skills they need. And if they're not being given the opportunity to develop these skills, they're going to fall behind. And too often they're being told, well, if you want to learn about programming or generative AI or robotics, you might have to go do that on your own time because you have a job to do. And we have to get people comfortable with the idea, and this came from, you know, lean manufacturing years ago, that every job has three parts. There's doing your job, there's teaching people how to do your job, and there's improving how you do your job. That teaching and improving of how people get their job done can always benefit from using new technology.
So often it can be difficult to address the use case with a solution if you don't know where to start. And another aspect of our series is informing the process industries community about how to get started if they decide to implement any of the technologies that we discuss. We've had some really great how to get started tips from our interviews. One particular one that stands out to me is from our sustainable digitalization episode with Aaron Davola, the head of sustainability at Siemens Digital Industries. Aaron covered how to get started in implementing sustainability, which is often easy to talk about, but very challenging to achieve. Let's listen in.
The first thing to do is always try and integrate sustainability into your decision-making processes. When we talk about sustainability, it's an outcome that's really there alongside other important outcomes like cost-effectiveness, like the features that you're producing. So when companies are making decisions about requirement specifications for a new product they're going to make, when they're looking at requirements for a new building, for a new process, incorporating sustainability impacts into those decisions is really the most impactful thing that they can do. And it's not related to a particular technology, but it's about managing another layer of complexity, which a lot of digital tools can help you with, and weighing those impacts alongside and those outcomes alongside the other outcomes that you're looking for. I think that that's really a great place to start, is to say, in my product lifecycle management process, how am I incorporating sustainability? Which factors are most important to the products that I'm making? When I look at my production process, where am I optimizing for environmental impacts right alongside where I'm optimizing for speed or cost? And I think that's really the best place to start. And a lot of the solutions that you have may be already able to handle that. If not, they're being interrogated to be able to put those factors in right alongside of it as well.
So how about you, Jonas? Do you have any favorite getting started tips?
Yes, I have a clear favorite. And instead of me going on at length about what it's about, I think we should listen to a clip from Mads Torrey Smith from Novozymes, which is now called Novonesis. I asked Mads about how to get started on data analytics related to the research and development function in a large global company. And he had some really excellent advice that he shared with us and our listeners. So why don't we go ahead and take a listen to that?
For me, it's really to focus on the data use, to understand how you are making decisions as a company. So I'm going to keep it maybe a little more generic, since in my experience, it depends on the company, it depends on the flow, and it depends on where you start. But one thing that goes across it is an exercise that I like to share that we do with most of our teams, where we are really trying to figure out exactly what you were just asking me. Where do we start and how do we get going, right? There's so many options. So what we would typically do, we would set the team down and we says, okay, let's make a data map. So basically what that is we sit the team down and we start mapping out maybe on a wall, on a computer, whatever works, on a whiteboard, who is generating data today, where are we getting data from that we need to run our experiments, who's looking at our data, and also more importantly, where is our data? Is it on our computer? Is it on our network drive? Is it in the cloud? Who's responsible for the data and who's responsible for the formats that they are in, right? So now you get this overview of everybody that participate in data.
Great advice from Mads. And there is one key sentence that he says in the beginning of the clip that I would like to repeat. You need to first focus on data use and then understand how you make decisions as a company. And I think this is a great piece of advice from him that is very simple. So simple that it may be overlooked in some technology implementations, because a lot of times technology projects focus on the technology itself, you know, how cool it is, what it can do, the features and benefits of the technology itself, and then the underlying business value is sometimes forgotten. I'm not saying all the time, but sometimes it is forgotten, or at least it takes like second place in why it should be implemented in the first place. But what Mass is saying, that this is no good. You must hone in on what's important, make sure you understand the implications of this new technology across the entire organization, and identify the value that it'll bring to the table for all stakeholders. And I think that's the one tip I would pass on as my number one. So in staying true to the Digitalization Tech Talks format, Don, what are some key takeaways that you'd like to highlight from your past 42 episodes? I know there's a lot to pick from, so it may not be as easy. At least I was having a little bit of a hard time thinking of mine.
Agreed. I think there are many takeaways, but if I really had to boil it down, I think there's two things that come to mind. Number one, we've only scratched the surface. Trying to keep up with all the digitalization-related developments can seem like an impossible task, and it's pretty clear that there will not be an end to new innovations for the foreseeable future, maybe for forever. We'll do our best to keep them coming to you in a nice, tight package and on a consistent basis to keep you up to speed. And the second one would be keep listening. Our guests have been amazing in the way that they educate us on new technologies that are sometimes very technical in nature, but they present it in a way that makes it very tangible and accessible to all shapes and sizes of companies in the process industries. And how about you, Jonas? Do you have some key takeaways you'd like to add?
I do have a favorite, Don, but I also want to repeat that the way that our guest makes these stories and use cases tangible and accessible to us is really, really great. And I love that about our guests and the show in general. But for my part, I would say my recommendation would be to stick with technology. Don't avoid it. Don't be afraid of it. And don't be afraid of the challenges that it may or may not bring along with it. Because most of these challenges can be solved by involving the relevant people in the selection and implementation process, as I mentioned a couple of times, and also by ensuring that there is clear business value behind the implementation. So by addressing these two topics as it relates to technology, there's a great value that can be gained from any digital technology implementation. And as I was thinking about this part here, I started thinking about that the purpose of the podcast, the finest purpose of this podcast, is to show our listeners that there are several success stories out there with technology implementation. And we want to find them so we can all learn from them and demonstrate that it can be done. And that's really my biggest takeaway from what we're doing here on the Digitalization Tech Talks podcast.
Well, thanks, Jonas. That's really a good key takeaway, I think, to pass on to the listeners. Well, that was fun. And thanks to you, our listeners, for joining us on this journey. Jonas and I look forward to doing this again with you, maybe in 4 years from now, as we're working our way towards episode 100. If you haven't had an opportunity to listen to some of the past episodes that we cited in this review, you can access them in every episode on your favorite podcast platform. And with that, I think it's time to bring this looking back episode to an end, as we're already are looking ahead to many great guests and episodes to come. If you have questions about any of the topics we discussed today or over the past 4 years, or if you have a topic idea for us to consider for a future episode, please feel free to email Jonas and I directly. Our email addresses are included in the show notes. And we're always open to your comments, thoughts, and feedback on the show. We'd love to hear from you. If you liked what you heard today, please help to spread the word by rating the show. And if you're not already a subscriber and would like to be notified when new episodes are released, please subscribe to the series. Thank you for listening to this special episode of Digitalization Tech Talks.